The Green Bay Packers have earned the right to advance to the NFC Championship game after beating the Dallas Cowboys 26-21 in the divisional round of the playoffs. We'll break it all down, including whether Dez Bryant made the disputed catch or not, right here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich, we're talking some Packers football. We're discussing a playoff victory over the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. Packers win 26-21. What a game yesterday. We're supposed to be joined this morning by Burke Griffin of WFRV-TV in Green Bay. Tried getting a hold of him before the show. I couldn't. I don't know. It could just be a momentary thing where he couldn't get to his phone. I've left a message. I've told him to call into the show if he gets it. So I'm hoping Burke Griffin will call in. Until then, we'll break down the game. I apologize as well. I was actually at the game yesterday, as you might be able to tell from my voice. It's probably don't have the best speaking voice today, but we're going to work through it regardless. So yesterday, 26-21, the thing everybody is talking about this morning, the catch or the non-catch by Dez Bryant, fourth down, fourth quarter. He goes up for a leaping grab over Sam Shields, actually at least momentarily contains possession of the football, but goes to the ground and it comes loose. It is determined by the official. It is a catch and down at about the 1 yard line. The Packers review, go to replay, and it is overturned, called a no catch. This reminds me, and I think many people out there, of the, and this is kind of where the rule came into effect as well, the Kelvin Johnson rule, I guess you could call it, Megatron rule, several years ago. I think it was actually in the season opener of the year for the Detroit Lions. Kelvin Johnson makes a catch in the end zone, takes a few steps, and kind of the ball, he kind of like almost slams the ball to the ground, and it comes loose, and it's determined it's not a catch. It is rather, or maybe that's just how the rule came to prominence through that touchdown right there, or non-touchdown, I guess you could say. But, I mean, same situation yesterday between the Cowboys and the Packers. Dez Bryant, you know, this would have been, if I'm correct, the situation is the Cowboys are up by 1 point at the time, correct? And, you know, this would have pushed it to an 8-point game. And, I mean, the ball was ruled down at the one. So, I mean, they still would have had to have, you know, punched it in. But I think with the Cowboys' terrific ground game, including, you know, elite running back DeMarco Murray, that they could have been able to do that and perhaps nail a cough, you know, put the nail in the coffin to the Packers. But regardless, you know, it's overturned and the rest is history. But this is every, you know, all people could talk about today, this non-catch by Dez Bryant. And, you know, was it a catch, first of all? And I agree that it's the referees ruled it correctly by the letter of the law, you know. But the question is, I suppose, should this actually be a rule in the rule book. I do think they called it correctly, and I think most people would agree, but I'm not sure. I actually think, you know, it should have been a catch perhaps. You know, I'm a Packers fan, but I'm not sure if I necessarily like the rule. I think, you know, once you take, you know, multiple steps, not just one step, you take multiple steps and then the football comes loose, then it should be perhaps a fumble instead of an incomplete pass. You know, I've heard people say this before, how it's so odd that they say the ground can't cause a fumble, but it can cause an incompletion. And people, I think, have a hard time distinguishing between the two. Or you know, you're just watching on TV, and especially your casual football fan just, you know, scratches their head and can't understand why that's the case. So, yeah, I agree, actually. The referees made the correct ruling here, but I don't know if they need to go back to the drawing board in the off season and consider this during, you know, typically during the NFL's annual owners meetings in the spring of the year, where they kind of make rule changes, whether this needs to be examined once again. You know, I don't know the answer, but I think when you take several steps and then lose control of the football, that, you know, I think it should be a fumble instead. What happened yesterday? I'm not complaining. As a Packers fan, I'm happy, but, you know, I have a hard time, you know, living with these rules, I guess, ones that I think should perhaps be overturned or changed or, you know, whatever. I mean, it is rather, you know, it's tough to understand, tough to grasp. Yeah, I did an interview with Bart Winkler on K107 before coming on the air here, and he's like, you know, it's so, you know, you go to the NFL rule book and where this is, it's, you know, Article A, subsection F, you know, of the rule book, that, you know, just it's you know, it's not football anymore when you're getting down to the nitty gritty and things like that. And it just doesn't seem like a game anymore when you got to consider so many things for this to be overturned. But regardless, anyway, that's the overriding discussion today, is the catch or no catch by Dez Bryant of the Dallas Cowboys. Regardless, the Packers go on to win. They go on the game-winning drive toward the end of the game. Aaron Rodgers throwing multiple touchdown passes. And I guess we can kind of, you know, start our discussion of the rest of the ball game aside from the catch here, with talking about Aaron Rodgers and what he was able to do yesterday despite the strained calf that he had been dealing with now for 2 weeks. And really, this is basically what I expected Aaron Rodgers to be like in this game. I kind of thought it would be very much like the second half of the Detroit Lions game, where he is basically immobile. He's a pocket quarterback. And I expected it to be like this. I suppose perhaps I was holding out hope that he, you know, after 2 weeks off, getting a bye in the first round of the playoffs, that he would be back to health, that he would be able to, you know, run, but that wasn't the case. It was the Aaron Rodgers I expected, basically being limited to being a pocket quarterback, and he was. But I suppose this just goes to show, and this is not an original idea of mine, many people have thrown this out there before, Aaron Rodgers at 50% is better than a lot of quarterbacks at 100%. Aaron Rodgers, regardless, it did seem like early in the game, he wasn't himself. There, in fact, I mean, it almost had to do nothing really to do with the calf. Maybe it did perhaps have to do with the calf, but he was kind of uncharacteristically off. You know, you sit there and sometimes you wonder, is it a miscommunication between him and the receiver, you know, wondering where exactly the receiver was, should be, where he should make his break. But I think Aaron Rodgers was just off on a couple of passes, especially early first half of the game. And he made a comeback. I don't know if it was something that clicked or whatever, but I mean, he catches on fire in the second half. In fact, you know, perhaps the most amazing statistic of the game is that Aaron Rodgers completes his final 10 passes of the game. No incompletions among his final 10 pass attempts, which included a couple touchdown passes. And just remarkable what he was able to do. Actually looks, you know, conjured up memories of Brett Favre, and he was able to flick that one pass out, kind of, almost looked like an option, how a quarterback would throw an option pass, just kind of flicked it out there, not your typical overhand throw. It conjured up memories of Brett Favre, you know, able to improvise out there. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers just did his thing. It's becoming vintage Aaron Rodgers. You know, he doesn't need to be on the move to be good. He's certainly better when he is, when he's able to extend plays and be mobile and elude rushers, things like that. But he doesn't have to. I mean, he could sit back in the pocket and throw a strike like he did to Richard Rodgers late in the game. You know, basically the game-clinching touchdown. And what, you know, to fit that throw in as tight a window as he did was you know, stunning. It was remarkable. And, you know, that's the Aaron Rodgers you got. And I think you got a glimpse of his health on the Packers' first drive of the ball game. They use Eddie Lacy a lot to get down the field on the Packers' first offensive drive of the game, which they scored, went on for a touchdown. But they get down near the goal line, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers steps up in the pocket just a little, and he's got room to run. You know, there's room there. I mean, a healthy Aaron Rodgers could have taken off and perhaps gone to the end zone. But he kind of decides, you know, maybe this isn't smart, first of all. I may aggravate the injury by doing this. I may not even get there because I'm a step slower. He ends up seeing Andrew Corliss streaking in the back of the end zone, fires a strike to him, touchdown, Packers go up 7-0. It was a great start to the game. I think you saw a glimpse of where Aaron Rodgers was at health-wise there in the first quarter when he decided to pass instead of run. And he probably could have run, you know, had he been, you know, his normal 100% healthy. Had this calf injury never happened, he could have just simply scrambled in for the touchdown. So, you know, I think Aaron Rodgers is, you know, it's tough to put a percentage on him. I suppose just, you know, running wise, he is 50%. It doesn't impact his throwing too much. I suppose sometimes it probably could impact his throwing on, you know, if there is a little bit of rush and he's got to reset his feet and you can't put as much, you know, pressure on that front foot, it, you know, maybe can't follow through quite as well. You know, because it is on his left calf, not his right, not his plant foot, but it is on the follow-through foot. Maybe it can impact you, you know, an extent that way. But if he's just sitting there, if the offensive line is doing their job, and by the way, the offensive line did do their job by and large fairly well once again, which should come as no surprise. You know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, by and large, Aaron Rodgers did very good. Did have the one fumble, which is disappointing. It's happening a little too much as of late. You know, Aaron Rodgers has had several fumbles this season. I wonder, and I'll have to look this up, and perhaps somebody on the live blog can do this to spare me of having to look it up during live on the show.
Is this year a career high fumbles for Aaron Rodgers? I mean, certainly great that he's had almost a career low interceptions wise, you know, in terms of playing a full season.
But boy, I mean, the second half of the season, Aaron Rodgers has fumbled the ball and lost the ball several times. Rather disappointing. Packers able to overcome that, however. And what's really interesting to me is, wow, I mean, take a look at this game. Jordy Nelson does not have a touchdown. Not even, you know, not a touchdown. Jordy Nelson was generally a non-factor, just two catches on the day. Randall Cobb has a good game, but doesn't score a touchdown. Those guys, Eddie Lacy, running back Eddie Lacy, doesn't have a touchdown. Your three biggest playmakers on the Packers roster, none of them score yesterday, but who does? Davante Adams comes up with arguably the best performance of his young career, over 100 yards and a touchdown. Andrew Corliss, the tight end, scores a touchdown. Richard Rodgers, the rookie tight end, scores a touchdown. You know, it had been such a storyline the past few weeks or so, basically since Davante Adams kind of went in the tank late in the year. Could the Packers find a third option to emerge outside of Cobb and Nelson? And they did that fantastically on Sunday. You know, these guys really emerged. Davante Adams and the tight ends, you know, take all their contributions combined. Amazing, amazing job by the Packers receiving corps outside of Nelson and Cobb. And Cobb still did end up having a very good game. Came up with the, you know, basically the, you know, the dagger. I think Wayne Larrabee threw the dagger after Cobb's last first down catch of the game off a deflected pass. That, you know, moved the change and allowed the Packers to go into victory formation to run out the clock. So nothing wrong with what Randall Cobb did yesterday. He just never found the end zone. And the other guys did. Two rookies, in fact, Davante Adams and Richard Rodgers. And this has to be such a load off Davante Adams' shoulders. You know, the last few weeks of the regular season, Davante Adams has several catches, several drops. And then the season finale, week 17 against the Detroit Lions, he doesn't even have a catch. Davante Adams, I don't believe he was even targeted that day. So to go to Davante Adams, and you realize this is probably very much a conscious effort by Aaron Rodgers to get him involved, in that he probably has the worst of the Dallas Cowboys cornerbacks guarding him. You know, showing trust in Davante Adams, first of all, they can catch the ball. Second of all, that he can get open against an inferior, you know, defender, at least compared to his peers. This is why you can be hopeful the Packers can come away from Seattle with victory, because that third option emerged. Not just third, a fourth and fifth, too. When you're talking about the contributions of the tight ends. And another rookie, Richard Rodgers, coming up with the big touchdown catch near the end of the game. Andrew Corliss on the first touchdown of the game, not to mention, you know, Andrew Corliss's big recovered fumble on a kickoff that Randall Cobb fumbled. That was rather disappointing as well. So, I mean, this really gives you hope, gives you confidence that the Packers will be a different team. You know, go back and think about the first game of the year at Seattle, and the Packers didn't really have that third receiving option. Davante Adams barely played that game, as I remember. You know, just the first game of the year, first regular season game, they weren't about to trust, you know, Davante Adams in Seattle. You know, NFL season opener, nationally televised, Thursday night football on NBC, the annual game where the Super Bowl champion, defending Super Bowl champion, gets to host, you know, the first game of the year. They didn't want to put a lot of pressure on him then. And, you know, Davante Adams, pardon me, was up and down throughout the course of the year, struggles at the end, hits the proverbial rookie wall, whatever. But you know, really, that this just was a breath of fresh air that he was able to do this in that type of environment in a playoff game and come up big. That was big. That was huge for the Green Bay Packers. Talking about the defense, kind of interesting that the Packers were able to win despite, you know, all the offensive prolificness, I guess, of the Dallas Cowboys. DeMarco Murray rushes for 126 yards. Tony Romo only has 4 incompletions the whole day. You know, the Cowboys were very good on offense, and the Packers were able to overcome this. Of course, aided by the big incompletion to Dez Bryant. So that definitely had part to do with it. But, you know, if we're going to praise the effort of the Packers on defense anywhere, a couple guys stand out and they play in the trenches. Number one, Julius Peppers coming up with the big forced fumble. And perhaps that was the momentum changer, the momentum turner of the game. When the tide turned for the Green Bay Packers, when he forces the fumble on DeMarco Murray in the third quarter, gives the Packers the ball back, that was big. That was big for the Packers right there. You know, Julius Peppers, this is why you signed him in the offseason. You know, 34-year-old player, you wonder whether he's got it in him anymore. Well, he comes up with a big playoff game. Not just that, he's got the sack early in the game, comes up with several big tackles throughout. It, you know, maybe kind of you can argue he didn't get much of a pass rush late in the game. But still, I mean, for coming up with the Packers' biggest defensive play of the day, that right there is why Julius Peppers was worth it. And on top of that, Mike, defensive lineman Mike Daniels coming up big in the trenches, you know, becoming a true three-down football player this year that you can depend upon both versus the run and versus the pass. You know, gets the big sack late in the game on Tony Romo. Packers come up with back-to-back sacks, kind of, you know, with combining with Nick Perry on one of them. And Nick Perry coming up with a pretty darn good football game, too. You know, coming up with 1.5 sacks on the day. You can argue maybe they were coverage sacks. Regardless, he ended up getting to the quarterback and making the play. You know, so I think that was great for Nick Perry, for his confidence, and perhaps you start feeling better about Nick Perry playing a larger role down the stretch, because I do see this here as well. You know, the rest of the Packers defense, you know, outside of these maybe few guys I mentioned, Julius Peppers, Mike Daniels, Nick Perry, not a really good effort from the rest of the Packers defense. Tremont Williams in the secondary, of course, has a bad day. A couple penalties in addition to giving up a touchdown. Morgan Burnett has a rough day in coverage. Clay Matthews, I thought, missed several tackles. Was one of those days where he was too aggressive for his own good. And speaking of Clay Matthews, okay, so the Packers advance to the NFC Championship game next week at Seattle. And you know, all year long, or the second half of the year, a lot of the discussion about the Packers defense is about Clay Matthews playing inside linebacker. And, you know, he plays there some of the time, and some of the time he doesn't. He's back at his old outside linebacker spot on the line of scrimmage. But I wonder, you know, you're going on the road at Seattle. This might be the moment where you need Clay Matthews at inside linebacker the majority of the game, the vast majority of the game. Because I think you need somebody, first of all, to spy Russell Wilson. I mean, here's one of the most dangerous running quarterbacks in the game. And I think you need a linebacker with speed to be able to take that away from him. But, I mean, what gives you the confidence that you can do that and line Clay Matthews up at inside and not rushing the passer off the edge is the emergence of Nick Perry.
you know, he goes and plays well here against the Cowboys in a, you know, a game with a high stakes in the playoffs. And that gives you confidence. Maybe he can carry that over. And maybe you don't need Clay Matthews at outside linebacker next week so much. Not to say you can't ever play him there. But, you know, the vast majority of the game, you know, I think maybe you need Clay Matthews at inside linebacker. You know, and that would also, you know, perhaps if he's out there in the dime defense, that's going to get Brad Jones off the field. As everybody saw again, Brad Jones having a rough day coming up with a penalty yesterday. Although he did kind of have one open field tackle near the end of the game that forced a fourth down. That was okay. But still, I think Clay Matthews is an obvious upgrade over Brad Jones. So I really do see that Clay Matthews getting a lot of playing time at inside linebacker this next week, spying on Russell Wilson, if nothing else. That very well could be the case. So, you know, that's big moving forward here for the Green Bay Packers. But they overcome it. The Packers defense overcomes, you know, relatively poor play, you know, giving up big time yards to Tony Romo and DeMarco Murray, not to mention, you know, Terrence Williams, Dez Bryant, whoever, Jason Witten, to come away with the victory thanks to a momentum shifting play from Julius Peppers and several sacks. Packers end up getting to putting pressure on Tony Romo late in the game, including some big hits. And don't think those don't add up. You know, the more you hit Tony Romo, the more he's thinking about it, the sorer he is. And, you know, I think that, you know, affects his play late in the game. Special teams, basically, you know, not much of a factor in the game. And that's good for the Green Bay Packers. That's a step up. You know, it could have been disastrous when Randall Cobb ended up fumbling a kickoff return. Thankfully, it's recovered by Andrew Corliss, who was Johnny on the spot to pick that up. That right there could have been, that could have been the dagger for the Packers had the, you know, the Cowboys gotten it deep in Packers territory and didn't have to drive very far for a score. It, you know, it could have been a much different outcome in the game had that happened. So thankfully it doesn't. And Mason Crosby has a good day. He's perfect on all his field goal and extra point attempts. He's got a very good day. You'll notice, if you did notice it, probably the casual observer doesn't observe this, but I certainly noticed Josh Sitton finally, for the first time since week 8, was back on the kick protection unit. You know, they had been all the second half of the year from the bye week onward, always worried about this, you know, Josh Sitton has this surgically repaired. I wonder if it's going to be in the off season. He tears a ligament in his toe and severely limited all year long. And I wonder if it's a case where it's not going to get better till it's surgically repaired regardless. You know, I don't know if it's just the stakes are too high now that they're in the playoffs and can't afford any more, you know, relapses. But Josh Sitton is out there on kick protection, you know, so they're not going to give up. They give up 7 blocks on the year. They're not about to allow any more in the playoffs. So a little bit interesting there. Just, you know, one little minor tweak to the special teams, but better than giving up a block and giving up some points. Big, you know, 6-point swing at the end of the first half there, where the Cowboys actually, Dan Bailey, very interestingly, he goes and attempts a 45-yard field goal and doesn't really, you know, come close. And I was surprised, you know, where, you know, the Cowboys, they go and miss the field goal and they actually, it's called back by penalty. There was a false start, I believe, as I remember correctly. And so they push him back to 50 yards. And you know, after seeing Bailey hit that first attempt, I am rather surprised that either the Cowboys didn't just go for it at that point or punt instead. But they tried the field goal again, and it doesn't even, you know, once again, doesn't come close.
And I was wondering, in fact, did somebody touch that ball? It seemed like Dayton Jones ran off the field, you know, kind of indicating that he tipped the football. I don't know whether he gets credit for a block or not on that play. Maybe he does. But I'm just surprised that the Cowboys do that. So the Packers get the ball back with, you know, all three timeouts left and about, you know, what was on the clock, roughly 40 seconds or so. And they go and get in range for a Mason Crosby field goal late in the first half. That was huge. That was huge. Cheese Tradamus on the live blog says Dayton tipped it. So it was tough for me to tell live in the stadium. I couldn't really tell whether he got a hand on it or not. But so Packers special teams doesn't hurt them on Sunday, which is big, which is big. They've hurt them all season long. Didn't hurt them on Sunday. Going to have to continue now as the Packers head to Seattle for the NFC Championship game this upcoming Sunday. Excited to watch that. Right to go to the Super Bowl. I'll tell you right off the bat, I have more confidence now that the Packers can win in Seattle than I do even in week one. And you know what? I guess it's so tough to tell at the time. I actually predicted the Packers would win in Seattle in the season opener. I don't know. For some reason, I just felt good about the Packers at the team. Maybe it was because they were just relatively healthy at the time. You know, you learn so much after the game in retrospect, you know, that Davante Adams wasn't, you know, ready yet, and we already talked about that. I feel much better now that the Packers have a third and fourth option emerge in the receiving game, I think there's so much to be said about the Packers' offensive line, B, that they've, you know, ends up in that Seattle game. Brian Bulaga gets injured in the midst of the game and misses, you know, the rest of that one, misses all of the Jets game. But ever since then, week three onward, the Packers offensive line has played together every game. They've gelled. They've been fantastic. So, A, you've got third and fourth receiving options emerge, maybe a fifth too. You've got an offensive line that's gelled and become one of the best units in the NFL. And then on the defensive side of the football, you've got a unit that has only improved the second half of the year with Clay Matthews at inside linebacker, which is, you know, just the changes they've made there have helped everybody else out at all levels of the defense, getting a pass rush and good coverage in the secondary, you know, moving Micah High to slot cornerback, things like that. You know, lots of changes there, and they've only been improving, albeit kind of a bump in the road this past Sunday for the Packers defense. Hopefully they learn from that and move on. I think the Packers stand a chance. I'm going to wait. I'm making a prediction here, but I certainly think they stand a chance. It's not going to be easy playing against a very good Seattle team, one of the best rushing offenses in the NFL. Is it the number one between what Marshawn Lynch can do and what Russell Wilson can do on the ground, not to mention what Russell Wilson can do through the air? It's going to be tough to beat them, although I think the Packers can beat them. They have the ability to do so. We'll talk about that later in the week. Sorry, Burke Griffin never called back here. I was hoping to get him on the show. Not sure why we couldn't get a hold of him. I just got no answer, just got his voicemail. But anyway, I was certainly happy myself to talk about a Packers victory over the Cowboys in retrospect here, regardless, on the show. So, anyway, we'll be back again on Wednesday having our usual Wednesday discussion with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. So looking forward to that. We'll talk to you then, folks, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at CheeseheadTV.com. We'll see you later. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, I'm everybody at Cheesehead TV. I'm Brian Caravu. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Song in My Head by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.